I'm Nathi Ndlovu, and this is Tech Central Show, which is brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit www.mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about their products and solutions, and we thank them for partnering with the show to bring you these great interviews. South Africa's G20 presidency, spanning through 2025, comes only 5 years before the deadline of the United Nations 2030 Development Agenda. As part of driving economic growth and sustainable development on the African continent, technologies that foster financial inclusion and access to formal banking channels are an important focal point for South African delegates at the G20 forum. The Reserve Bank, in partnership with the Bank of International Settlements Innovation Hub, are hosting the sixth edition of the G20 Tech Sprint. The G20 Tech Sprint invites people to develop technological solutions to global challenges and to help solve the problems facing global regulators and central banks. This year's theme is Trust and Integrity in Scalable and Open Finance. My guest in studio today is Lyle Horsley, Head of FinTech at the Reserve Bank, who is going to tell us more about this year's G20 Tech Sprint. Lyle, welcome to the show and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Nathi.
It's a pleasure. Could we begin from a historical perspective? Could you tell us about the origins of the G20 Tech Sprint and its objectives?
Thanks. So the G20 Tech Sprint is really a global competition that looks to seek out best-in-class solutions to help policymakers, central bankers, financial sector regulators solve some of the policy challenges that they have. So it started around 6 years ago. It started with the Saudi G20 presidency. And since then, the problem statements that have been put out by the different G20 presidencies have really sought to tackle some of those common policy problems, but really looking at innovative ways to solve them. And so it's an opportunity, I think, for the public sector to come together with private sector to help co-create solutions and to collaborate and explore together in terms of how we can solve for some of these policy challenges.
Mm. So you mentioned Saudi Arabia as the inaugural hosts, but other hosts include countries that you could say from a financial inclusion perspective and the solutions that they've brought forward, including rapid payments, you know, are similar to South Africa. That would be India as well as Brazil. Could you speak to some of the solutions that have come out of those tech sprints?
Absolutely. So under the India presidency in 2023, they looked at improving cross-border payments. Under Brazil's presidency in 2024, they explored technological solutions to advance sustainable finance. And so when we developed our problem statements, we looked at the past, right? Because we wanted to, A, not repeat what was done previously, but also, I think, build on what the problem statements that were articulated in previous G20 presidencies. Mm-hmm. And I think the Indian G20 presidency really resonated with us because those challenges are still the challenges that we are faced with from a cross-border perspective. Mm-hmm. And so under India, they explored things around technological solutions to address money laundering risks and looking at, you know, foreign exchange, how to enhance foreign exchange, frictions that exist in the system with cross-border payments to enable emerging markets, developing economies to settle transactions in their own currencies. Mm. And then they also explored things like a multilateral CBDC platform. And so the technological innovations that we saw, I think, under the G20 presidency with India in 2023, I think those solutions remain relevant, right? And as we, from a South African perspective, look at things like CBDC, I think those solutions and technologies that came to the fore there, including things around artificial intelligence, decentralized exchanges, automated market makers, those kinds of solutions, I think, would continue to be relevant in the work that we are doing. And similarly, from a Brazil perspective, when they looked at things around sustainable finance, how to enhance your ESG reporting, how to look at nature-based solutions to advance finance. I think as we grapple with our climate change initiatives, the technologies, the solutions that were shortlisted there remain relevant. But of course, we didn't want to repeat those problem statements. So we tried to pivot from particularly the cross-border piece. And so our problem statements then say, how do you think about fast payment systems that can potentially operate cross borders as well? And how do you think about data sharing in a world where we know finance is becoming increasingly digitized and everyone then creates a digital footprint? How do you think about sharing that data in the context of open finance? And so we hope that we're building on the previous G20 presidencies and the tech sprints as well.
All right. So you spoke about problem statements, which we'll get to the details of in a moment. But, you know, the theme is integrity in scalable and open finance. And I'd like us to explore those concepts. You know, could you just break down what open finance is?
So open finance speaks to the ability for institutions that hold customer data to share that data with third parties and to do it in a way that the customer consents to that data being shared and in a way that's secure so that there aren't data breaches when that data moves from point A to point B. And that really seeks to then unlock new use cases for consumers, new financial products, new financial services, and to potentially do that in a way that lowers costs, that lowers the barriers to adoption for consumers, that makes it more seamless for consumers to access these financial products or services if they have a new innovative way that it can potentially be made available to them. And ultimately to reduce the costs, right? So that you bring more competition into the system and that you can then potentially get a loan not only from one kind of financial institution, but if your data is able to be shared with a different financial institution or entity, they can potentially look at your risk profile differently with different types of data and potentially give you a loan at a better rate, right? And so that then enables me to participate in the financial system in a way that I potentially get a better experience, a better product, a cheaper product. And so that's what open finance ultimately aims to achieve.
So if we could make that a little more concrete, you know, I as Nati at the moment have data about me sitting at a bank, but I might want to approach a different type of lender, whether maybe that may be a retailer or some kind of other kind of institution. So are you saying that the bank will then share my data with that institution, or can the data be sourced from other places as well?
Yeah, so in the way open finance has been constructed, currently it's around who holds the data, right? And banks hold a lot of our information. So it's around your data holders. It doesn't exclusively have to be banks, but in the current context, banks hold a lot of our information because we all have bank accounts and we transact out of those bank accounts. And so open finance would be saying that data holders need to enable customers to consent to data being shared with third parties, and those third parties need to be authorized to be able to hold customer data. So if you think about your transactional history, for instance, you would want to say that, you know, I want to show that I have consistent income that comes in, and here are my bank statements that show that every month, you know, there's money that comes into this account. And I tell my bank, please share this data with entity B, and entity B can then enable me to obtain a loan from them. They will perhaps look at some other data from me in terms of my social media activity or some other payments that I make on my cellular bill, something like this, right? Yes. And they use those different data sets to then risk profile me and provide me with a loan. And so it's really saying, when we think about the different data that sits within financial institutions, whether it's your insurance information and your insurance premiums, enabling that data to move to another party who can potentially offer you a better rate, a better product, a more customized product. So that's ultimately what open finance speaks to.
Okay. And this also involves gaining data from new sources, right? So I could imagine that if I live close to a spaza shop and every month on the 15th, I go and get, I don't know, groceries for 300 Rand, 500 Rand, and I make a payment at the end of the month, if we can somehow show that that payment is consistent by digitizing it, that's another source showing that, hey, this payment is this person is actually a good payer, etc.
Absolutely. So it is looking at all those. From open finance, you can then get to open data, right, which then speaks to other types of data, like your data that you have with your cellular service provider, the data at the spaza shop in terms of the payments that you're making. And so we can then branch out into open data, and some jurisdictions have done that already. The focus that we are looking at in the tech sprint is around financial data and how to share that financial data. But to your point, absolutely. I think as you digitize more sources of data, you can potentially think about sharing different types of data sets across the ecosystem.
Okay. Now, this is interesting. This is done by the Reserve Bank. And, you know, there's a reputation amongst central bankers that they are a very conservative bunch. And you have a duty now to foster innovation on the one hand. And on the other hand, you need to ensure that the system is safe, it's secure, always on. And that means being conservative. How do you balance these two factors?
Yeah, I think it is a tricky balance, right? So I think there's different ways or different things that central banks have been doing. The one is, you know, central banks have set up these innovation teams or fintech teams. So I myself come from the fintech team. And the team that we have within the SARB is specifically focused to look at emerging technologies and the impact of these emerging technologies on the policy and regulatory frameworks. And so we collaborate quite closely with your regulatory teams who are developing the frameworks, enforcing the rules, imposing sanctions, and so forth. And I think the underlying principle that many regulators and central banks have adopted is to say that if it's the same activity, same risk, same rules, right? So something may initially seem like it's quite different to what's already out there, but fundamentally the activity is very similar, right? So you moving money from point A to point B, you may just be doing it in a different way, right? You want to use a wallet to do it instead of a bank account. But the activity fundamentally is similar. And so I think what central banks have been doing is developing or setting up these teams that can have dedicated focus to support regulators in thinking about where are the risks, where are the potential gaps in the frameworks that they have. I think things like tech sprints are also useful because it allows you to put out a problem statement and just see what solutions can help you to solve some of the problems. I think things like regulatory sandboxes are also useful tools to enable, again, central banks to work with innovators to see how these business models that are emerging potentially raise questions around the adequacy of regulatory frameworks and the policies that exist. And I think out of that, then, if you have better information, you can then make better decisions around how is your regulatory framework adequate, where do you potentially need to close some gaps, strengthen the framework, and so forth. And so I think through these kinds of interventions, you walk this rope of seeing, you know, what's coming, what's on the horizon, how is finance potentially going to be changing, but then also being able to respond with appropriate sort of frameworks that can enable the innovation.
Okay. Now, looking back at South Africa's G20 presidency, there are three task forces. There's one on inclusive economic growth. There's another on food security. And the third, which I suspect might be more towards what you are doing, is AI, data governance, and innovation for sustainable development. What other initiative is the Reserve Bank involved in as part of this presidency?
So as part of the G20 presidency, and you absolutely are right, I think conceptually the work that we are doing fits under the AI data governance and sustainable innovation piece. And so under the G20 presidency, within the sort of finance track, the work that we are focused on, there's work around AI in financial services, and looking at that through sort of three lenses. The one is how AI impacts the policymaking from a central banking perspective. The other one is looking at how AI changes the supervisory approach that central banks and supervisors need to think about, right? So as AI continues to be adopted within the financial sector, your tools that you may need as a regulator also potentially needs to adjust. And what does that mean for emerging markets and developing economy regulators? And then the third element around AI looks at the use of AI within the financial sector, right? And how there can potentially be risks that stem from increased AI adoption and usage within the financial sector. Mm. The other areas that we are focused on look at cross-border payments. So how to enhance cross-border payments. We know that from a Southern Africa perspective that the cost, the speed of cross-border payments, the costs are still high, the speed is still too slow, the transparency is still not there. And so there's work that we are doing to see how do we unlock or solve for some of the challenges that exist around cross-border payments. We are also looking at crypto assets and looking at implementing. So the Financial Stability Board has put out a set of global recommendations for countries to implement around crypto assets. Mm-hmm. And so under the G20, part of our work is saying, are we able to implement those recommendations? What are some of the challenges around cross-border, around crypto assets? Mm. We know that they are inherently borderless, right? And yes. So they do present a specific kind of challenge. And then we're also doing work around cyber resiliency. And so I think the G20 tech sprint, again, does speak to elements within the broader finance agenda that we've got. Mm. And we do want to use the G20 tech sprint to complement the work that we are doing under the other priorities in the finance track.
Okay. And looking at the tech sprint itself, you did say that it is focused around problem statements, and there are three of them. The first centers around digital identity solutions. Now, digital identity is something that's a priority for government. I think Home Affairs is also implementing a digital identity solution of its own. Could you just tell us why digital identity is going to be important in the future of finance?
Okay, so I think all three problem statements that we've developed speak to the overall theme, right? The theme around trust and integrity. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about trust, one of the first things when you want to do anything in the financial sector is, well, who are you, right? Mm-hmm. Confirm to me that you are who you say you are.
Yes.
And as we increasingly adopt digital finance, right? So as technology, you know, has an impact within how we transact, how we do our financial transactions, the digital identity piece, I think, becomes foundational as well, right? Mm. And a key enabler to unlock many financial services to consumers.
Yes.
So if you think about it similarly to the way currently you would move around with your ID or your driver's license or your passport, right? Whenever you want to open a bank account or obtain any kind of financial service, an insurance product, you would have to make that identity available. Mm. And I think with a digital identity, it's really about asking, how do we digitally enable this identification of a consumer? Mm. And how do we do that in a way that's secure, that preserves the privacy of the consumer, that is not open to digital fraud and those kinds of things, so that we can potentially open an account much quicker remotely. Doesn't mean you're coming into a building, bringing your documents, the document being copied multiple times, lying somewhere on a desk.
Yes.
All those things create opportunities for fraud, right? And so I think if you have a digital identity that's verified by an issuer who is able to issue you with an identity, in this case it's the Home Affairs and the South African government, and you've got an identity that you can then use at multiple places, right, and make available to multiple institutions, instead of, you know, each one asking you the same set of information multiple times, that identity can move within the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I think you potentially do unlock saving of time, a lower compliance barrier for consumers, and an overall just safer consumer journey.
Mm. So looking at the work that you're doing and the work that's happening at Home Affairs, would you say that there's a danger of duplication, or is it complementary?
So it's complementary, and the SARB is working very closely with the Department of Home Affairs at the moment. Mm. And so part of why we, one of the motivations for us in thinking about this problem statement was because of the work that the SARB is doing around the payments ecosystem modernization effort, which includes digital identity as a key enabler of that work. And under that project, there's close collaboration and coordination with the Department of Home Affairs as well.
Okay. I think we've spoken about credit data portability quite extensively. And cybersecurity seems like a no-brainer. For people... Well, for the institutions to trust the people and for people to trust the institutions, the systems must be secure. How important is that in terms of once the solutions are built, in terms of driving adoption, how important is it that people have trust in the system?
I think that's crucial, right? So one bad experience would typically make you not want to use a particular kind of product or service. And so I think when we talk about the scalability of solutions, you do need this trust to be anchored within how the solutions are developed so that people then are able to use these solutions across multiple platforms, potentially even across borders, right? And so I think it becomes absolutely critical that there are solutions that are developed that are scalable. And for that to happen, people need to trust in the solutions. And so the problem statement that speaks to the fraud, mitigating fraud and cyber risks around fast payment systems, I think that becomes really important, because if you have, you know, a solution that is prone to fraud or prone to some kind of financial crime, consumers won't want to use that solution, right? So immediately the trust goes out the window. And the payments become such an important piece, because once I start making my payments digitally, I now have a digital footprint, right? And now I can start showing you that I make regular payments. Or these are the suppliers that I pay frequently. And that then unlocks other kind of financial services. So now I can access credit, because I'm able to demonstrate that I've got this digital footprint where I've made all these payments. And you can then access credit. You can access an insurance product, an investment product. And so it really, they often say payments are the gateway, right? And so... digital payments, I think, similarly become the gateway that then unlocks broader financial services to consumers.
Okay. So now back to the tech sprint. We're inviting innovators from all over the world to come along and help build these solutions.
Yes.
What's the format of the competition?
So we launched the tech sprint on the 6th of May. It's now open. The call for applications is open. I think it's a unique opportunity that we have in South Africa. So we are making a special call to South African fintechs, innovators and so forth, and on the African continent. And so it's now for those innovators to develop their proposals, right? So the proposals will close on the 20th of June. So there's a platform that's been created as well, where you submit your proposal on the platform. You respond to the problem statement that you think you are best placed to respond to. And then those proposals will be evaluated by the teams internally. And we would then develop a shortlist. And those shortlisted projects, proposals will then be published. And then they'll be... those shortlisted proposals will be reviewed, and there would then be an opportunity for the shortlisted solutions to be further developed so that they can take the technology that they've developed and build that out into prototypes and solutions that can then be further reviewed by our independent panel of experts before we then announce the winners for the problem statements.
All right. And how many candidates will be shortlisted?
So in previous G20 tech sprints, they've shortlisted around 5 to 7 per problem statement. So I think we're looking in that range, right? Around 5 per problem statement that we would then look to shortlist.
So 15 to 20,
so about 15,
say.
Yeah.
Okay. And I mean, developing innovative solutions is one thing, but you've spoken about the fact that you're then going to work together with these winners to flesh their solutions out. So what other qualities are you looking for in a winner?
So I think solutions that are unique, solutions that are scalable, solutions that I think aim to address the problem statements that we've put out. I think these problem statements really speak to real world challenges that are faced on the ground, right? And so I think we would want those solutions that are able to solve in a very real world way these challenges that we've put out. I think the ability to see those teams that are able to build out their solutions so that it can have that real world application.
Okay. We're going to talk about prize money because there's some prize money up for grabs in a moment. But there are also other benefits to this, what including support. So what can winners look forward to?
So I think, this is something that we've thought about in terms of, besides the prize money, what kind of support do you provide to the winners? Mm-hmm. And so I think there is an opportunity, to be on this global stage to collaborate with policymakers, not only from South Africa, but really at a global level as well, because this is a G20 initiative. Mm-hmm. And I think that collaboration with global policymakers, I think, is really important. The opportunity to showcase your solution on a global stage as well. And then I think that the ability to help policymakers solve a global problem, I think that's a really powerful thing, right? To say that you've played a role in helping move the dial, even if it's just a little bit, right?
Yes.
I think that's a really powerful thing as well. Mm-hmm. And from there, if there are solutions that are that we see as potentially, being something that you can take into a live environment or into production, I think that's something that, can also be explored, right? Whether it's from a South African perspective, given the work that we are doing, which is so closely aligned to these problem statements on identity, fraud, open finance, for us to see what solutions exist in the market and potentially, after the tech sprint, take that forward in some way. So I think, given the stakeholders that we invite to the tech sprint, academia, private sector, governments from all over the world, venture capitalist firms, I think that's deliberate because we want to create this ecosystem where if you do have a winning solution, there are multiple avenues that you can potentially explore after the tech sprint to see how do you take your solution forward.
You get to play with the A-team. So yes, let's get to the prizes. What prizes are up for grabs?
Yes, so for the shortlisted proposals, there's a $5,000 stipend that gets given.
US
dollars, yes. And that's really to help those shortlisted firms develop their solutions further, right? Mm-hmm. So to build out their technologies. And then the winner, for each problem statement, the winner gets a $30,000 prize money as well.
Okay, enticing.
And you can submit your proposal.
I'll submit five. And when will the winners be announced?
So we are looking at announcing the winners in November. Mm-hmm. We haven't confirmed the date yet, but we will be announcing that. But we are hoping to have an in-person, a live ceremony where we would have the opportunity to showcase the winning solutions, and that would be hosted later in November.
Okay. Lyle, thank you very much, and all the best in finding the winners. And to all the winners, all the best to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Yes.
Thank you so much.
All right. That is Lyle Horsley, Head of FinTech at South Africa's Reserve Bank, for Tech Central Show.